I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Well, welcome back to Monday. Good times. Show number 1207. I'm Steve Cochran. Hi. How are you? I'm shaking my hand in your general direction. Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show at Cochran Show on Twitter. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number and also the number for your text. Oh, I got a busy show today. Why don't we start? You ready to start? Let's do it right now. The top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Local issue first. We're all wondering whether Dave Ennett survived the Tough Mudder competition. We'll have an in-depth conversation about that. In a couple of hours, probably right around 8 o'clock or so. But in the meantime, Dave, do you know if you survived?
As far as I can tell.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Sounds like it's promising.
You may need to talk loudly, though. He still has mud in his ears.
I do. I'm finding mud
everywhere. It's like sand in funny spots. You got mud everywhere.
I do. Mm. I do.
All crevices. Ooh, no.
Yeah. Crevices, cracks, and other things. All right. Well, I'm glad you're alive. And
thanks so much.
And
really.
Steven did well. My son
did very well.
Yeah, of course he did. I think Joe, Super Joe, was the only one that had you surviving in the pool. Everyone else was picking a time that you would get.
Yeah, thanks for the support. It's always nice to know that the great people at WGN have my back.
Yeah. You got it, buddy.
Moving on to number one, Senator John McCain passed this weekend. Well, it wasn't a surprise. It's a gut punch. Tributes rolling in. Tributes at the level of a president passing. And while he ran twice, he did not make it to that position, as you well know. However, the tributes seem perfectly appropriate for a true American hero. We're going to have General John Borling, who served as a cellmate, if you will, in Vietnam at the Hanoi Hilton, who is a friend of the show and a good friend of John McCain, and that very small club that only they could belong to. And General Borling will be on after 8 o'clock this morning. Our friend Pat Brady knew McCain quite well. And when he was head of the Republican Party, he was also McCain's campaign chairman in Illinois in 2008, along with his wife, Julie. He'll be on in a few minutes to discuss that.
Did you watch the 60 Minutes interview, which was replayed last night?
Great. Yeah. Great. He was phenomenal. You know, and the few times that he was on the show, remember when he came in live? And more than one occasion, but it's a few times he was on the show. He was just the coolest guy.
And he's hilarious.
Very funny.
There was one time, Mary, you'll remember this, and it was, Steve, before you came back. Mm-hmm. It was with Johnny B. And Senator McCain was walking by the Showcase studio, and someone, the producer went out, grabbed him, brought him into the studio, and we had Dick Vitale on the phone that day.
So was McCain
talking to Vitale, and he keeps telling him, Dickie V. Just kept referring to him.
That was funny.
Remember that?
Very
it was
funny.
Just a great conversation.
After he lost in 2008, there was questions constantly. How do you feel? How do you feel? How do you feel? He goes, I slept like a baby. I sleep like a baby. Every 2 hours, I wake up and cry. It was very funny. It was funny about himself. And filthy, by the way. The mouth on that guy was entertaining.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Off the air, obviously. But you know what he did? Talked like a sailor. And a sailor he was. United States Navy. We are less today because John McCain is gone, but he would want us to push forward, and we will. And we got a lot of work to do, as you know, because there are no new John McCains in the pipeline, as if there could ever be another John McCain. But we certainly need someone who employed his method of politics, which was really crazy now, compromise and get along with the other side. The White House drafted a statement on John McCain, then didn't release it. President Trump being blamed for that, and because he is said to, by sources, said to have had a preference of wanting to put out a tweet. He put out a tweet Saturday night that didn't mention the military or Senate service or any particular praise, and said that he wished the family the best. It was no secret that these two guys didn't like each other. However, you would hope the president would be classier than this. But if this is where you're going to get hung up today, you're missing the message. The message is about Senator McCain and in his life, not about a disappointment from Donald Trump. Because the other thing this morning that popped up is how come the flags are no longer at half staff at the White House while they are at Congress? I don't think Donald Trump gets up and decides where the flags fly. Maybe he does. I don't know.
Well, there's a report in Politico this morning that there was a big statement drafted by Sarah Sanders about John McCain that talked about his career and his being a hero and his service, and that Trump vetoed.
We just talked about that. I think you had your headphones off.
I just didn't hear you say that, Sarah Sanders' name.
Yeah, but well, the point is the same. The point is the same, that Trump is disappointing, and is that news? I don't think so.
He could have vetoed the flag thing, though. You never know.
It's possible. Yeah, it's absolutely possible. We also had bad news out of Jacksonville this weekend when a gunman opened fire during a video game tournament at the Jacksonville Landing Mall. The sheriff there says three people dead, including the gunman who took his own life. That gunman is said to be 24-year-old David Katz from Baltimore. Motive unknown at this point. Authorities say the gunman used a single handgun. Nine other people suffered gunshot wounds and various injuries yet to be determined. I'm going to get to some good news, I promise. Not yet, though. This is
tough.
Eight people killed in a West Side fire, including six kids. Eight children and teens killed in a fire early Sunday in Little Village on the southwest side of Chicago. All the victims are 16 and younger. One was 3 months old. Two other teenagers critically injured. Cause of the fire, reason for them all being alone. Nobody knows any of that. But they're getting to the bottom of it, and we'll let you know when we know. All right, give me a quack, will you?
Quack.
All right. It's going to be hot today.
Is this the good news?
It's already hot.
It is muggy.
Walking
it is
out really the door muggy. This morning muggy. Was like, oh, man.
You know what it is? It's like walking into a bowl of French onion soup. That's what it is.
It is.
Yeah, without the good taste.
A heat advisory issued for today. Heat index could reach 110. Steve, 110? Is that accurate?
No, 110? That's not accurate. No.
Well, what do you got?
109.
About 100.
Sure.
100?
Yeah.
Can I meet you in the middle? 105?
I heard Vic say earlier 105.
Well, you guys got like a bet in the newsroom? Where's it going here?
You know, once it's after 90, it's hot no matter what. Who can feel 102 versus 100?
Oh, I can.
Oh, come on.
Yes, I can. I can tell you 102 versus 103. Beyond Chicago, the advisory includes Aurora, DeKalb, Dixon, Elgin, Oregon. Oregon. Is there an Oregon I'm missing?
Not that we know of.
Yeah. Is that Oswego, maybe? Probably Oswego.
There's Oregon. There's Oregon, Oregon, Illinois. Illinois.
Mm-hmm. My girlfriend's from there.
Oh, there is? Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
It's by LaSalle, Peru.
I thought we annexed Oregon or something.
No.
And Wheaton as well. The heat index warning, the heat warning lasts until 7 o'clock tonight. And this is also not quack-worthy, but Lakeshore Drive closures begin today. The Chicago Department of Transportation resurfacing North Lakeshore Drive from Monroe to Grand Avenue and making repairs on that bridge carries drivers over LaSalle.
Yeah, it actually started last night after the triathlon.
How bad is it now?
Right now, it's okay. Not too bad. There's going to be delays all morning, though, between Monroe and North Avenue, so that's where it's closed.
And one bonus item. Dave is in Williamsport, Pennsylvania right now, wrapping up the Little League World Series. Who won?
The Little League World Series was won by Hawaii with a 3-0 victory over South Korea.
Well, with the volcano.
I was thinking
flying
that.
Lava.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and now you got this hurricane that comes from.
It's a tough year for Hawaii. Very nice story. Their first Little League World Series since 2008.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. So there you go. That's your top six at six.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Clerk Pat, thank you again for your tremendous stewardship of this party. I don't have to tell anybody that the Illinois Republican Party was in some disarray and Pat was going to take it over. He and Julie have had some enormous challenges, and our prayers have been with you and Julie. And the great work you've been doing, I want to assure you that your reward will be in heaven, not here on earth.
That's John McCain talking about Pat Brady and Julie Brady, Pat's late wife, when Senator McCain was here not all that long ago. That must bring back some interesting memories, Pat Brady.
Oh, my God. You know, the memory and the thing that I got to see from getting to know him through politics is he was one of the funniest people I'd ever met.
That's true.
I don't know if you remember, right, but I sent it to you. He was on Saturday Night Live, and he did the songs from Barbara Streisand. He sung them.
Yeah, we got to play that. We got that clip. We're going to get to that later. It's very funny.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. I mean, just I guess you spent 5.5 years in a cage, and I think you're going to have General Borling on later, but can talk about that. But just like just a real funny guy, a patriot. It's a huge loss. He was very decent to us. He was very loyal. When Jim Durkin ran the campaigns here twice for president, McCain came back all the time to raise money. He was always in Chicago, or frequently in Chicago, helping Republican candidates raising money, and he always was just jokes like that. He's a very funny guy.
You lost your wife, what, 3-4 years ago now?
Yeah, before four and a half.
And he, John McCain, would tell you this today if he was sitting there, sitting here, I should say. He loved attractive blondes. So I'm sure he was happy to get between your wife and you whenever he could talk to her, right?
Well, once we were walking up, I'd met him years ago, but we were doing a fundraiser, and he was there. And I go, Julie, this guy loves blondes. So just, you know, and I mean, in an appropriate way. So we walk up there, and you know, I'm a hero worshiping this guy. I've been following him for 30 years, and I'm just getting ready to shake his hand. He goes, hey, Pat. He kind of looks at me for about a millisecond. He goes, hey, Julie, you can get up here. You get the picture right next to me.
I salute that. By the way, you had a phrase for him a long time ago on the golf course with you and I that you've repeated, and I certainly agree. The last real man in Washington, right?
Yeah, I feel that way, and especially as a Republican, and not to get too deep into politics right now, but McCain, to me, represents the last of the Republican Party that I joined, you know, many, many years ago. He's the last guy that's willing to work across the aisle, last guy that's a true conservative on a lot of the national security and the fiscal issues, and he's the last guy that stands up for things, I think. I mean, there are plenty of people there that do. I'm not criticizing Congress that much, but he's kind of the last of the tough guys, and Vietnam era war hero. So it's a big loss, and the tributes. I can't believe the depth and length of the tributes. He was obviously a patriot and a national hero, but this is almost like a president.
Yeah, exactly, and it's something that they wouldn't normally get ascribed to a senator. It just isn't.
In the rotunda, having his body in the Capitol, I think it's only happened 30 times.
Right. There'll be three different services, one in Annapolis, which meant so much to him because he was a Naval Academy guy, and his father and his grandfather, his Navy legacy. He loved to tell the story of how he graduated fifth from the bottom, so anybody could achieve anything. And other Navy men who went through Annapolis will tell you he's a legend there. Because until he had to get to serious work, he had a lot of fun, didn't he?
Yeah, the stories are a Playboy fighter pilot dating very pretty women. I think that's pretty much sums up the first 28 years of his life until he got married.
Right.
And he did. He crashed, I think, 4 or 5 planes. One in Corpus Christi Bay, clipped a wire in Spain and knocked out a bunch of power, and then he got shot down. So he had quite a life.
Right, and you remember the story from the Straight Talk Express, and I think I heard Jake Tapper retell this. Were you ever on that plane in 2000? Because Tapper said it was a bucket of bolts.
Yeah, I tell you what, you get Durkin on tomorrow. He said that to a couple people, and he can tell you a story about when he was up in a small plane flying around the state of Illinois and what McCain said to him, because Durkin's wife was on the plane. She's not a very good flyer. And it's a similar story.
I think it's the same punchline, right? Because they had hardcore turbulence on this bucket of bolts, as Tapper called it. And McCain, standing up in the aisle looking at all these scared reporters, said, I don't die on airplanes.
McCain will not die on an airplane. Right. He goes, you can't kill me on an airplane.
Right, yeah, right.
That's the real man stuff. That's a guy that I think, and he said from his POW experience, and in the line he gave in his speech, his acceptance speech in 2008, he goes, I love my country. I fell in love with my country and I became a prisoner in someone else's. And I think that's what really inspired him to do What he did. And I remember I was living in Arizona when he ran in 82. I was a junior in college, and I started reading about this guy. And I'm like, oh, my God, is this guy, he's the real deal. And he had a debate line in that debate that shut the debate down, and he ended up winning, and he was in the Senate 4 years later.
I think the last time he was in town, or at least one of the last times he was in town, matter of fact, you brought him in here. And afterwards,
wasn't he funny?
He was brilliant, and started Don Rickles ripping on me, so I know you love that. but you guys went back to his hotel room, and didn't you tell me you spent about an hour watching the news channels while he was heckling everybody?
Oh, God. I was in the suite. We're up there watching. We're watching MSNBC, and he's just going off on everything they're saying. It was funny. I can't believe I'm sitting here with McCain watching cable news.
Right, and watching him heckle it. All right, so here's the big question, because he would want us to talk. Listen, everybody wants to be remembered fondly, I'm sure. But I'm sure one of the things he would want today is less talk about him and more talk about where we go from here. And that's the question. And you have more faith in Congress than I do. We can't even talk about there being a next McCain. There is no next John McCain. But who's going to be the person that's going to work across the aisle and lead the way to have others do the same?
Well, in the Senate, and a lot of people were asking that question last night, and there really isn't on either side right now. You can't replace McCain. But I think the nice thing that he got to do in the way he went, unfortunately, is he got to do a lap around and say, hey, this is what I believe in. This is what I stood for. And I think everybody should look to that as an example, and people will. And he was more optimistic than anybody on the future of the country. But he called it as it was, and the things that the Trump presidency is doing, and Trump, he didn't like and thought were bad for the country, and he called it out. So that's what I mean by real man. That's one of the last guys that'll do it and not worry about getting reelected, and not worried about making his party angry.
One of the coolest things I heard somebody say about him was something that came out of his mouth. And he was asked in the last year prior to his passing on Saturday, does he get scared? And he said, sure. He said, I'll wake up or I'll catch myself in a moment where I'm scared. And then I stop and say, hey, old man, you've had an unbelievable life. And then he looked at the camera and he said, you're never going to talk to anybody luckier than John McCain.
Yeah, they have a documentary out now, For Whom the Bell Tolls. It's his favorite book, novel, and it's very interesting. That's how he closes it out. But you know what? He was also, for all the great traits he had, he was a very loyal guy. He was very loyal to Jim Durkin. You talk about Julie. She hadn't been dead for an hour and a half, and the phone rings. It's John McCain.
How about that?
And that's the kind of guy he was. And it's a huge loss. There's never going to be another one like him. He's an American original. He's our version of TR.
It's an honor from your perspective, I'm sure, to have known him. But we're going to need you now to take charge of at least your chunk of the Republican Party and keep this thing between the white lines, because that's the way McCain would want it to be.
And I'd be proud to. And you know, listen, you got to look to someone for guidance. And I've always looked to him because I just like that's the way I think you should do. You do the right thing first. And his campaign theme in 2008 was country first. And that's a good theme. It's inspired my kids to want to do public service, and it's kept me going. And believe me, that chunk of the Republican Party that likes me, Steve, is pretty small. So,
Well, Leader Durkin will be on tomorrow. Is there any stories he can tell us? Because a lot of those stories are off the air.
A couple of them can't repeat. But we had some. Durkin and I went out there several times to D.C. to talk to him and sat in his office. I've never laughed so hard in my life.
That was a funny dude.
Those aren't stories that are going to make it on WGN radio, though.
Right. That'll be in the cable edition.
Golf course.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
That's Pat Brady, former head of the Republican Party, and of course, helped chair the McCain for President campaign on one of those runs, and got to know him a bit. And was glad that he didn't run away with his wife Julie back in those days.
Evidently, yeah.
We'll come back, get your headlines, and remind you that General John Borling, who is one of the few people on the planet who can tell you a lot of what McCain's life was like in the Navy, out of the Navy, and as a POW as well. He'll talk about his friend John McCain after 8 o'clock this morning. All right, headlines next, 720 WGN.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now. Dr. Morse.
It is 6:46, and Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care, starts here. Hope you had a nice weekend, Doc.
I did have a nice weekend. It's amazing that the weather was better in North Carolina than it was here, but it was very nice.
You're doing a lot of traveling, man.
A lot.
Yeah, but you're having a good time.
Yeah, having a great time.
As long as you're having a good time.
Yeah.
You could check in occasionally.
Yeah, yeah. I could.
All right, listen. Whenever anyone of consequence passes from a medical condition, it's important that we talk about it because it brings special attention to it. But I don't know, is this glioblastoma, first off, why is it so severe? Why is it so tough to deal with? And that is, correct, what killed John McCain.
Yeah, it's interesting, Steve. You know, last week we talked about Aretha Franklin and pancreatic cancer, and I kind of put pancreatic cancer in the same boat as GBM. Not that the cancers are similar, but there's very few cases. We have no good screening, and by the time the symptoms cause, or by the time we see symptoms, the disease is often beyond a point where we can treat effectively and efficiently.
So the cancer itself shows up as a regular tumor and then it grows, or I mean, you know, explain it in layman's terms for someone like me.
Yeah, so you start out with, we have what we call glia cells in our brain, and they start multiplying more than they should, and they form a tumor. That tumor is going to put pressure onto some portion of your brain. It may cause you to have a seizure. It may cause you to have blurred vision. It may cause you to have cognitive things. It may cause you to have personality changes. Depending on where that tumor is in your brain is what the symptoms we're going to see. So you can see how we can't just say, well, let's look for this symptom. If we have somebody that has a headache that's over their eye, there's a good chance that's a GBM. No, the symptoms are all over the board. So that by the time we do get the symptoms and start the workup, we look, and sure enough, there's that the tumor is in the brain.
Does it have anything to do with where it is in the brain? Not the effects of it. Obviously, that is a piece of it. But do glioblastomas end up in this area more than that?
No. No, and that's the weird part about it. You know, where it ends up in the brain is very important, obviously, because the first step is going in and surgically remove. But we have glial cells all over. And the bad thing is now by the time they see that, these little buggers, these little glial cells, have already started to spread to areas that we can't even identify when we do an MRI.
Now, this is 9 years to the day, Saturday, that Ted Kennedy died of the same condition, right?
Yeah. So you can see the frustration in the medical field. And I take the medical field, but I also say there's a sense of frustration with patients as well. Anybody who has had a GBM or has had a family member, a loved one who's had a GBM, and they know what they've gone through, it is extremely frustrating to say, why can't we do better with this cancer? Why not?
And 13,000 Americans a year are diagnosed. That is a small number in the world of cancer, isn't it?
Correct. It's a very small number, and that's the problem. When we have these cancers that are small but extremely deadly, you often don't get the attention that a colon cancer does or a breast cancer. So you don't see, you know, the Susan Komen, you know, 3-day walk where lots of money is being raised.
Right.
So you aren't seeing the attention for these smaller cancers that are much more deadly and no screening, so that the research dollars aren't there. So this is one of those where if you love Senator McCain, which many did, you know, think about donating to GBM, you know, and allowing them to start to do more research.
There are doctors, obviously, that focus on the specific research. Does it help the research dollars when famous people are killed by this?
Yeah, you know, I guess whether it's unfortunate or fortunate, yes, it does. Anytime we have that awareness, it kind of brings people up in doing what we're doing right now and taking the opportunity to talk about it and talk about what happens and how it actually works, allows people to understand a little bit more the frustration that the researchers have to a point where they say, you know what, we do need to make something different. Because these are cancers that attack people, both pancreatic and GBM, attack people for no reason, mainly based on age, and there's not a lot we can do. So we need to be able to figure this out. We have very smart researchers, and you know they are doing some pretty cool things. But when you look at this, the brain is something obviously you're going to need to function. And when we have a tumor that hits this hard and is this aggressive, we need to be able to figure out how to treat it more aggressively.
Now, this all sounds like a very negative conversation, fact-based, obviously, but negative about outcomes. In fact, there is a little bit of reason for hope, right? Because there's some vaccination progress.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. When we think of vaccinations, you know, we always think about, oh, we're coming up to flu season, so I'm going to get a vaccine to protect me from getting the flu. This is not that type of vaccine. There's no vaccine that's going to protect you from getting GBM. But what happens now is we make a vaccine based on the tumor. So it's interesting. We go in, we take a portion of the tumor. We take as much of the tumor out as we can. That tumor, those tumor cells are then mixed with our own white blood cells, and we teach those white blood cells, this is foreign. Go find it and kill it. And we inject it back into the individual, and then now the immune system turns on and says, okay, instead of looking for influenza virus, what I'm looking for is the GBM cancer cells, and I'm going to go and attack them.
It seems so logical, again, from a layman's perspective, but I suppose if you come to me and say, we're going to pump cancer cells back into your body to kill the cancer cells that are there, I might ask for a new doctor.
Yeah, well, what we're actually doing is we're putting the white blood cells back in after we've taught them to look for this.
I got it. Okay.
So it's the same concept for vaccines, right? We give them a little portion of the virus to say, this is bad, go find it or stop it from coming. It's the same thing we're doing here. And that's so important in brain cancer, and especially in this brain cancer, because the surgeon will go in and they'll say, I did a 99.9% resection. I got the entire tumor that I could see. But it's that 1% or 0.1% of those cells that have now seeded and have moved other places in the brain that are going to multiply, and you're going to have a recurrence.
You got an extra minute for me after the break?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, hold on. Dr. Kevin Most is with us, and Dr. Most is always sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. Dr. Kevin Most is with us. 312-981-7200 is the number. A couple of listener questions, Doc. The aspirin, when you suspect someone is having a stroke, is that an appropriate thing to do?
Yeah, it probably is. You know, strokes we've talked about in the past, there's two different kinds of strokes. One is caused by a blood clot, and one is caused by bleeding. The vast majority of them are caused by blood clots. So aspirin can sometimes slow that. It would be nice to know to make sure that it's not a bleed, but aspirin is something that could definitely help.
And as far as going back to school time, everybody's getting their sports physicals, everybody's doing their fall kid thing. What should the rest of us be doing?
Yeah, you know, if we always do that, we take care of our kids so well, you know, it's like, okay, let's all make sure we check in. You know, we've talked before, I think everyone should have an adult checklist as well.
Yep.
To say, have you had your colon cancer screening? Have you had your cholesterol checked? Do you know what your blood pressure is? All those things that we can do for ourselves to make sure that we stay healthy. Take the opportunity now, too, while the kids are back at school, to go out and exercise. Do some things that you say, I can't do that because I had to drive Timmy here, or I had to go do this. Now you should have some additional time for yourself and start to look at some things that you can do for yourself from a wellness point of view.
And as you go through the week, what's the number one agenda item on your medical checklist?
You know, for me right now, it is more about what can I do about making myself feel better. I've just taken on another additional role here. And you have to start looking at work-life balance and try to figure out, if you're going to do additional stuff at work, which we all do, every time someone's boss comes and says, I'd like you to do this now, make sure that you have some time for yourself, whether it's getting out and playing golf in the afternoon or going for a walk or just relaxing. You need to have that work-life balance, because as we increase stress, bad things happen not only to our body, but to our psychology and to the way we interact with other people.
Yeah, you got to get away one way or another. Thank you, my friend. As always, we'll post those notes that you are so good to send to us along with the podcast. The podcast goes up in just a matter of minutes wherever you get podcasts, at WGNradio.com for starters, and all the other podcast places. You know the podcast places. And Dr. Kevin Most, thank you as always.
Hey, yeah, and glioblastomafoundation.org if anybody's interested in making a donation under Senator McCain's name. I'm sure that would be appreciated.
That's a great idea. Glioblastoma, and it sounds ridiculous to say this, but spelled just like it sounds.
Yep.
Glioblastomafoundation.org.
You got it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. By the way, I don't think I mentioned yet that Sandberg's out today.
Yes, she is.
And Justin Kaufman is out all week.
Mm-hmm.
He is on the Pete Zimmerman vacation tour. I mean, what are the chances on a staff this size of, what, 7, 8, 9 people that we would have two people both go to Ohio and Pennsylvania on their vacations and, you know, over the course of 3 weeks? Because I'm just saying, that's not your traditional vacation place. Bahamas, Ohio, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's not the first place that comes to mind. Yep.
Yeah.
Lake Erie.
Yeah, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And he's actually going to see art museums or art installations in Cleveland and Pittsburgh. There's got to be something else going on. Who goes to see art in Cleveland and Pittsburgh?
I don't know.
He's up to something.
When you think art, you think Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
It was Miles' idea, wasn't it?
Oh, well, if it's Miles' idea, I'd sign off on it.
And I was at a wedding in Cleveland last month.
Oh, this is getting weird.
Well, I could see people get married in Cleveland, but you didn't go to an art museum there, did you?
There was art in the venue.
Oh, there was.
Okay. So there's a little bit of...
All right, maybe I'm wrong. Coming up, Coach Fitz. Coming up, the MVPP. Coming up, Ryan Nobles, who can talk about being on the air when all the McCain news came out this weekend. And later on, we'll find out if Dave Ennett survived the Tough Mudder competition. We still don't know.
Well, here's a hint. I'm here.
Well, I suppose that's true. Back with the news in a moment on 720 WGN.
Final seconds winding down. Two coaches exchange an embrace, handshakes, and for the second consecutive year, the Northwestern Wildcats win a bowl game, and for the first time in their history, they win back-to-back bowls. A 10-win season. It's all over, and the Wildcats win.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Thanks. Have a great rest of the day. Go Cats.
You can tell by the smile on his face, the glint in his eye. I'm not talking about Coach. I'm talking about Dave Ennett. He's excited about Wildcat football back on Thursday night against Purdue. By the way, Coach appears for then courtesy of who?
Sponsored by Fields Mini of Chicago.
Coach Fitz joins us now. I know you're excited. Are you as excited as Dave Ennett is?
I'm a little kind of out of whack. I mean, talking to you on a Monday kind of seems a little strange. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I like the Friday. You're typically pretty worn down. I would assume on a Monday morning you're juiced up, ready to rock.
But there's a little bit of that.
I've been listening on the way in. I think you got to get your rear end going here, Steve. This
is right?
Pretty disappointing for the kickoff of the football season to hear the lack of juice in your voice this morning.
I apologize, Coach. I'm on it. All right, quarterback, Clayton Thorson or T.J. Green? Who's going to get more snaps?
It will not be you, I promise you.
Well, that's you know what? That's the best coaching decision you've made all year.
Hey, both guys have had really good camps. So has Aiden Smith and Andrew Marty. I've been really impressed by those guys, and the quarterback group is in good hands. So look forward to letting you know at 8:06 on Thursday.
So we're not going to know then until Thursday. Is that the message?
I think I've been pretty clear. Yeah. I mean, haven't mixed my words.
No, that's true. Well, you look at this game. You're starting on a Thursday. It's not the first time this has happened. As a matter of fact, your first game as head coach was on a Thursday, as I recall. Was it not?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit nostalgic to really think about that, Dave. But, at the end of the day, I would not mind doing this every year. I like kicking it off on Thursday night. It allows us then hopefully to stay off of Friday nights as a program. I've been pretty outspoken. I think Friday nights are for high school football.
Right.
And if playing Thursday night in the opener gives us a chance to fulfill that obligation, I would be for doing it, quite frankly, every year.
There's some young on this Purdue team. Can you exploit that, a young defense?
Well, I think anytime you go into the opener, a bowl game, and maybe even playing a team out of a bye week, there's a lot of unknown that you can't control, and especially in the opener. They've obviously graduated players, so have we. How they're tweaking their systems to fit their personnel. Maybe what have they studied that they feel like they can do better based on what they did a year ago, and what new concepts have they designed and developed? So, the first quarter, first half are typically a pretty big adjustment time in the opener, and we'll keep our focus on us like we always do, but we're going to have to get ready to adjust as a coaching staff, without a doubt.
It seems like a lot of years you open the season against an opponent you haven't seen before. A lot of times against perhaps a school which has undergone a change in the coaching staff. So there are a lot of unknowns. And as you say, you have unknowns going into this one. But are there fewer because you're playing a conference opponent and a division opponent at that?
You hope so. That would be great. Right. It would make Thursday evening a little bit easier. But I know Jeff is, first of all, he's an outstanding football coach and they're very talented. And they had a great season last year, and I know they're working to build off that momentum. We know there's a lot of things that are going to be in their favor. You know, great crowd. It's going to be tough always when you go on a road to win a Big Ten game. So we've really got to focus on us, Dave. We've got to make sure we put together a great plan that our guys can execute. And then we've got to get prepared to handle adversity. This will probably be the first time, you try to put that into practice. You try to put the guys in adverse situations and win a workouts, things of that nature. But first time with this team, seeing how we handle it on the road will be a great lesson for me and for the rest of the staff. And we'll be able to, of course, tweak our plan as we move forward based on how we perform Thursday.
Your four captains include three seniors, Clayton Thorson, of course, Montre Hardage is a captain, Tommy Doles, your right guard is a captain, and a sophomore, Patty Fisher, your middle linebacker. I can't recall a sophomore ever being a captain. I know you've acknowledged it's at least the first since you've been the head coach. What is it that has made this guy so successful in such a short time and so special as a player?
Well, I think, like everybody says, leadership is coupled by performance. And, I think it starts there with Patty. His performance speaks for itself. He's a guy that I think a year ago obviously made a pretty strong statement to the type of player that he is. But then, off the field, he's just a guy that shows up every day, brings absolutely everything he's got, and I think the guys really respect that.
Last question before we let you get back to work. From my perspective, it's so different today for kids because everything's on a screen in front of them that maybe as a coach you don't have to be concerned about kids getting overhyped for a big national game on ESPN on Thursday night, or is that still a factor?
No, that's still a big factor. Yeah, no, the drone camera will be there, Maria Taylor and Kirk Herbstreit, I grew up wanting to play for, this is unbelievable. Yeah. Our young guys, our redshirt freshmen, we've been talking about it, and hopefully they'll handle the atmosphere well.
Good luck today, and as the prep continues, last word, Dave.
We're going to have the drone microphone out there also. I just want to remind everybody.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Just a heads up, Fitz.
Okay, well, be careful, Coach. We'll pick up whatever you say.
I'll make sure I'll just continue to say go Cats. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Later.
Excited to be with you.
That's Coach Fitz. Now, I have to believe he'll tell you before the game. He'll slip some information to somebody. Could be coded. Could be a message you have to break down with your special team of coded message experts. But somehow you'll know who's going to start before the game. You're Dave Ennett.
Well, he might text me during warm-ups.
Okay.
And it might be a code. It might just be the number of the player.
Or possibly they have, Secret Service-type names.
That could be.
The hawk and the bear or whatever. Yes. Whatever.
Yes, the bear flies at midnight.
Yes. Yeah. But this T.J. Green kid, you like him?
T.J. Green, I think, he played a little bit last year. Not mm-hmm. much, mm-hmm. but certainly his pedigree is really good. His dad, Trent Green, played for years in the NFL, yeah. Does games now for CBS, and he was a terrific high school player, but didn't get a lot of scholarship offers, walked on at Northwestern, and now he has a chance. He's going to play. It might not be this week, or he might not start. He might start. Evidently, we don't know.
I'm going to get the word at 8:09. I hope you get it at least at 8:08.
I'm counting on that.
Yeah, okay.
And Coach Fitz brought to you by Fields Mini of Chicago.
Thank you to Coach Fitz, and we look forward to a great season of Northwestern football. We will come back with the MVPP.
You know how people call me the Maverick?
Yeah.
Well. I thought I might try a strategy called the reverse Maverick. That's where I do whatever anybody tells me. I don't ask questions. I just go with the flow. If that doesn't work, I go to the double Maverick. That's where I go totally berserker and just freak everybody out. Even the regular Mavericks.
That doesn't sound like the best strategy.
It isn't.
Who is all our friends are there? Maverick is the name. Riding the trail to who knows where, luck can
the very funny Senator John McCain. I saw a little bit of that and heard a little bit of that when he was a guest on the show. But I barely got a chance to know him. And the few times we were with him, he was one of those people, again, that you wish you had more time with. But a fabulous guy and worthy of all the praise that's coming his way since he passed on Saturday. It's always amazing, right? And there's no other way to do this. It's human nature. But it's not until you die that you find out how much people liked you.
Yeah.
And you would hope, and certainly in my set of beliefs, he's around to enjoy it because he'd be around for a little while before he goes on to that next place. And 9 years ago to the day, Teddy Kennedy died. Ted Kennedy died of the same horrific tumor. And there's something, I don't know, again, it's your own sets of beliefs, but there's something comforting to know that he and Ted Kennedy are arguing about politics in heaven right
yes,
now.
Yes, no question. And I think, you know, if you look at his statements in that 60 Minutes interview also, Steve, where he talked about when he went back to the Senate after being diagnosed,
right,
after he had the, what, it was a blood clot above his eye?
Yeah, they call it a collection of blood above his eye, and they thought it was simply that, something that could be managed. That's right. When they found the tumor.
But he talked about what it meant to have all of his colleagues, his peers, come up, say a few words, give him a hug. And so I do think that he felt that maybe he felt the plaudits he's getting now, even before he left this earth.
There was certainly a love for him that was expressed, but he always found a way to put love of country ahead of himself when he mm-hmm. talked about it. He was very, see if this sounds like anybody you know who's in charge now, because it doesn't. He screwed up a lot in his life, but he was the first guy to admit he screwed up in his life and that he paid a price for it, and he should have. He was rightfully proud of his family's service. Much like General John Borling, who is another POW who communicated with Taps on the Walls, Borling's famous books, these guys don't talk about this stuff unless you ask them to. And even then, on the two presidential campaigns, when you staff, so you got to talk about this. This is what people need to know about who you are. He wasn't comfortable talking about it then.
Yeah.
But the funny always came out. We're going to play the Barbara Streisand parody coming up in a second. But there was another moment, I'm pretty sure this is on Saturday Night Live, where he's sitting at the Weekend Update desk, and he literally said, come on, it's my turn. I want to be president. Why don't you pick me? The sense of humor, which came out a lot, now those stories are really coming out. CNN's Manu Raju is one of their Capitol Hill guys. Said McCain came up behind him during a live shot and put horns with his fingers above Manu's head like a 12-year-old. Lindsey Graham was one of his best friends in the Senate, said that he, Lindsey Graham's not much of a reader, but McCain was. And just to drive Lindsey nuts, he'd take McCain's favorite book and read it out loud next to him, trying to make him a better man. And the story, I mean, the stories just go on and on and on. And it feels like a president passed because, even though he came close in that regard on a couple of occasions, he never made that office, as you know. But this is an incredible amount of praise given to, and I believe worthy of it, given to Senator John McCain. Now, you grew up in D.C.
Yes.
The idea of someone lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And McCain is one of the few that will have that honor. There's three separate services, a family service in Arizona, a service for his military brethren in Arlington, or in, not Annapolis, in Annapolis.
Yeah, because he went to the Naval Academy.
Right. And his memorial service itself will be held at the Washington National Cathedral this coming Saturday. Burial will follow at the Naval Academy on Sunday. The Saturday morning service will include Barack Obama and George W. Bush, two presidents who beat him in presidential elections. And he had knocked down dragouts with these guys in a lot of ways, certainly more with Bush than Obama. But it goes to show how he was willing to work with the other side, that he forged a relationship with both of these guys, no matter how ugly it was. And there was a guy named Karl Rove, who is one of the nastiest political operators that's out there. And Karl Rove, no, they never admit this, but Karl Rove and his people orchestrated a whisper campaign in South Carolina, bringing out the worst of racism, that John McCain had a, quote, black baby with a black prostitute, when in fact John and Cindy McCain had adopted a little girl of color from another country. I can't remember where the baby came from, but grew up in their family, and is John McCain and Cindy McCain's daughter. But that sort of racist pull that they were able to pull helped Bush win in South Carolina and effectively ended McCain's campaign back in 2000. There's talk about whether or not Donald Trump will be there. He won't be. The family didn't want him there. McCain didn't want him there. Mm-hmm. And that was communicated. And as I said, he'll line state at the Arizona Capitol first, followed by the memorial service in Phoenix, and then move on from there. His other close friend, President Joe Biden, will speak at the Arizona service. And Biden told a great story yesterday, too. I don't know if you saw it, where Biden said when all this stuff started in South Carolina in 2000, Biden was, you know, like McCain, a very prominent senator. And Biden called John and said, tell me where. I'll fly there tomorrow. You tell me where, I'll fly there tomorrow. I will get there tomorrow. I will talk about you. I will talk about your character, about the man you are, and we will put this nonsense to bed. And there was a pause on the phone, and McCain said to Joe Biden, he goes, you're going to make it worse. So John McCain, gone far too young, as far as I'm concerned, at 81, and we certainly hope that his vision of an America that can talk to each other again comes true sooner than later. Ryan Nobles, who was covering the story on CNN this weekend, will join us to talk about that in a little bit. But in case you missed it, all of this leads to the most valuable person on the planet, John McCain.
Senator John McCain sings some of the most beautiful songs ever written.
People who need people are the luckiest people in the world.
/7:44 now. Senator John McCain on Saturday Night Live singing the hits of Barbara Streisand. Punchline, by the way, was Barbara Streisand's been trying to do my job for years, so how about if I do hers? He was a funny dude. He really was. And all the cliches apply. Of course, he'll be missed. But the question is, who is willing to step up and step into his place? His fellow senator from Arizona, Jeff Flake, who he was very kind to, has announced that he is, you know, not going to run again. So Flake's Senate seat is up. There's a possibility, though it clearly doesn't seem likely, there's a possibility that the governor could appoint Jeff Flake to fill out the end of John McCain's term. But more than likely, the number one decision the governor has to make is he going to appoint a Trump Republican or a McCain Republican? And because Arizona is so pro-Trump, it's probably the first and not the second. Our friend Ryan Nobles at CNN was on when all this news broke over the weekend. How are you, sir?
Great. How are you, Steve? Good morning.
I'm doing fine. To some extent, I'm a little surprised, but pleased to see this incredible outpouring of support around the world for John McCain.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where even when you know something like this is coming, you never know how people are going to react to it. And it's really just been across the board just positive about the life of Senator McCain. And, you know, from both sides of the aisle, I think that you're seeing people kind of responding, not necessarily to, you know, his policies or what he necessarily promoted, but kind of the way he went about that work in a civil way, not afraid to stand up for what he believed in, but doing so in a way that drew respect from both Republicans and Democrats. And I think the other part of that conversation is how there's a fear that that level of civility that John McCain was so embodied for such a long period of his career is starting to slip away. And with a voice like his that was so powerful and required so much attention, how is that going to affect the political discourse going forward? And obviously that tracks back to how President Trump has responded to all of this.
Yeah, you know, the disappointment after McCain came in, really risked his life coming in after his surgery when his doctor didn't want him to fly. And he came in and made that speech on the Senate floor, said, we're not getting anything done. We're here to pass things.
Right.
We're not here to block things. And really, I mean, honestly, very little changed after that. So the concern is real.
Yeah, no, and I, you know, it's funny you mention that because I was there on Capitol Hill that day. I was at Capitol Hill the night he did the thumbs down that essentially killed the Obamacare thing. And I remember when he gave that speech, and I was not in the Senate when it happened, but I was in the Russell Senate office building, which might become the McCain Senate office building. And everywhere in the halls of the Capitol, you could hear a pin drop. Everybody was transfixed on what he had to say. But it was weird because when he was done, everyone kind of shrugged their shoulders and everything went back to normal. So, yeah, I mean, it takes so much now to really move the needle when it comes to this kind of discourse. And unfortunately, that the people that are calling for the two sides to come together are being marginalized, and the people on both sides, Republican and Democrat, that are calling for to stick to your guns and to, you know, to pass these purity tests, they're the ones that are becoming stronger voices in the political discourse. And, you know, what that means for the country, I think, is something that we should all be concerned about. It probably tracks back to the things that you and I always talk about, the gerrymandering of political districts,
right,
the way that campaign finance influences all of this. Interestingly, something that John McCain tried to reform. So, you know, it's really incumbent on everyday Americans to try and change this, because you can see how politicians are reacting to how voters feel about these things and not the other way around.
Yeah, that's why it's so vital that you get up, get out, and vote, because it does matter. And we'll break down the candidates in the immediate five-state area and interesting races around the country over the next few weeks. But you know what this it feels like to me, Ryan Nobles? Ryan Nobles from CNN, the guest. He's nice enough to join us every Monday. This feels like Dad died, and now everybody's got to fight over the inheritance. And you know what I'm talking about? Where the family starts to come apart. They'll sort of behave. There's less behavior as Dad got sicker. And now he's gone. So they're just going to forget what he wanted. I mean, I hope I'm wrong about that.
No, I think you articulate that perfectly. And I think it'll start with the replacement for Senator McCain in Arizona. What direction do they go in? And are they going to appoint someone that's more in his mold, somebody that tries to work with both sides of the aisle, or someone that's going to be a hardened conservative? And I think that you're probably going to see that it's going to be the other way around. And, I think that the problem, I think, that Republicans have been dealing with for a long time was that there was this reckoning with Trump where they had hoped it was just a phase that they could get through and then move on. Well, now they've come to believe that he controls this wing of the party, and they've just essentially adopted his style. And if that's what the future of the Republican Party holds, there could be a rude awakening in October. And then what happens after that? So I think there's going to be all these stages of response to losing somebody like John McCain and his voice. And I think it puts the Republican Party in a very difficult position. Which direction are you going to go? And that's not to say that John McCain was perfect and that he had all the answers to all these big issues. But as I said before, it was the way he went about it that people respected, and that seems to be less and less of a commodity in Washington.
Well, and the saddest thing is honesty is not a commodity anymore. And I remember, again, going back to the South Carolina primary, where after he got out of the race, he came back and he made a speech, and he said, "I always said I'd be truthful, and I wasn't. I wasn't truthful to my own beliefs. I had my ancestors who fought for the Confederacy and probably fought bravely. I'm sure they did. But if flying the flag, the Confederate flag, hurts people today who had their freedoms taken away, my ancestors were wrong and I'm against it and I should have said that." Can you imagine?
Right.
Can you imagine politicians standing up now and making that kind of speech? I can't.
No. And you know what's interesting is I'm anchoring at our 11 a.m. show, 10 a.m. Chicago this week, and we're going to have a guest on, Corey Shockey, who was on on Senator McCain's presidential campaign. And she has an interesting take on his decision to appoint Sarah Palin as his running mate, which that's obviously been a point of criticism for Senator McCain in his life. But I think what her argument was at that time in 2008, John McCain recognized that there was this level of dissatisfaction with a certain wing of the party. And what his hope was is to do exactly what you're talking about, Steve, to deal with this group of people that were unhappy in an honest way.
Right.
And try and come up with some sort of way to bring them back into the fold in a civil way, and not to ignore their concerns, but to embrace their concerns but do it in a way that everyone would be able to move forward. Now, obviously, whether or not that worked, appointing Sarah Palin, we could debate for hours. But the point is, instead of that being successful, what happened was that group of people continued to be marginalized, and then the bad actors in that group became the leaders of that group, and now eventually the leaders of the Republican Party. And that's why I think the Republican Party is in such a disarray right now. And it's not as though John McCain tried to ignore that group. He tried to bring them in. It just didn't work out.
Without getting into the disappointment of the Trump response, frankly, Trump couldn't have won either way because he's made his own bed in this regard. If he had gone on with a long statement, he would have been criticized for that as well. And I'm not defending Trump. I think if you listen, you know that. Having said that, I'll let you go on this. Where does the Trump news go this week? His CFO has a deal for immunity. His inner circle seems to be about to choke him. Where's this story going?
I find so interesting about all this is how the president has not responded. You know, it's one thing to disassociate himself with Michael Cohen. We probably could have all seen that happen. But when you have somebody like Alan Weisselberg and you have someone like David Pecker from AMI who've cut deals with authorities, and these are people that were the behind-the-scenes players in a lot of the Trump orbit. You know, they know where all of his bodies are buried, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, the president has not attempted at this point to disassociate himself, and he seems to be playing it close to the vest. And that makes me wonder exactly what level of cooperation both of these guys have cut with the federal authorities. I mean, there's a chance that it was just related to Cohen, and it doesn't track back to the Mueller investigation. And I think that if you start to see the president come out against them publicly, that maybe that is a foreshadowing to the fact that their cooperation goes beyond just what Michael Cohen's situation involved. And, you know, I talked to a lot of legal experts about this last week, and their sense was, once you begin to cooperate with authorities, you're cooperating with authorities forever. You don't go half in on cooperation. Yep. So I think this is definitely something that's looming in the background as a problem for him. But as we always say, we're not going to really know the full impact of it until Robert Mueller wraps up his investigation, and we just don't have any idea when that's going to happen.
It's our friend Ryan Nobles all over social media and on CNN today and all week long for the 11 a.m., 10 a.m. Chicago time show, 11 a.m. on the coast or wherever you're listening around the country. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Have a great week, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
That's Ryan Nobles from CNN.
Called the Sad Grandpa. That's where I get on TV and go, come on, Obama's going to have plenty of chances to be president. It's my turn. Vote for me.
So good. There's an amazing sort of sidebar story to this, which I suppose should be more front and center. Did you know that John McCain's mother is still alive?
I did not.
She's 106 years old.
Really?
106 years old. Roberta McCain, a close family friend, told People magazine over the weekend that Roberta, of course, is incredibly proud of her middle child. John McCain, when he died Saturday, was 81. Roberta McCain was his biggest supporter, leader of his fan club, incredibly proud of him. His mommy loved him. He knew that, so said the source. Roberta grieves for the loss of her son. She's a very strong woman. She's been through a lot in her life, but she said it's a very tough blow to bury your child. And isn't that said like a mother?
Yes.
You're 81 year old, your child.
She's beautiful, too.
Yeah, she is.
And I didn't realize he had seven children. That was another interesting thing.
Adopted little girl and combined families as well.
She was from Bangladesh, by the way.
Yes,
you were asking.
Thank you.
Bridget.
That.
Yes.
And by the way, do you know that his wife, Cindy McCain, is the heir to a very large fortune? And I can't remember what the family money is, but her dad did very well. Thank you. She is loaded.
Yeah, are you thinking of John Kerry's wife?
No, I'm thinking, John Kerry's wife is the ketchup the fortune.
Yeah, Heinz, I think.
Cindy McCain is a different family fortune, which I'll Google. It's just I can't Google with my left hand. I'm not would it be ambigooglish if you're not ambidextrous?
That's what it would
be. All right, Steve's next. It's 720 WGN.
Senator Obama, this is truly a good day for America. You know, too often the achievements of our opponents go unnoticed. So I wanted to stop and say, congratulations. How perfect that your nomination would come on this historic day. Tomorrow we'll be back at it. But tonight, Senator, a job well done. I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
That's an actual campaign commercial that ran that sums up what you're hearing again and again and again about the character of John McCain. And he, of course, made that legendary concession speech when he lost, about not just congratulating Barack Obama, but getting behind his presidency. And can argue all you want about how it worked out. It's sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. Normally, we talk to Dean at this point, but I really wanted to connect with General Borling. General John Borling is a part of that very small club that none of us would want to be a part of, and that's POWs who served and can only communicate most of the time with taps on the walls. Condolences on the loss of your friend.
Steve, good to be with you this morning on one hand, and kind of sad, obviously, on the other. I know that the clip you played there was telling in terms of the character of John. I was there at the Biltmore that night that he made that concession speech.
All right.
And I had my granddaughter with me. She grew up in Phoenix, and it was going to be a cast of thousands. So as it turned out, it was just me and my granddaughter that went up there, and we were standing very close to the senator when he made that speech. And for whatever reason, although I know the reason, I was all over national TV showing proximity and all of that business over the course of the next day. But it was because I have this knockout, good-looking granddaughter who news guys were looking for some, you know, different thing. And here's this little girl, you know, who's just absolutely gorgeous, looking up with rapt attention to the senator. And I just happened to be standing there. So I was Kirsten's grandfather. But I remember the telling words that night, and both intellectual and the physical kind of burden that concession speech exacted. But of course, John went on and continued to march, which is the mantra that all of us use.
You know, the connection that you all have lasts a lifetime, and others have passed as well from your group. How often were you all able to stay in contact with each other, not just you and McCain, but the others who still survive?
You know, we have what I will call is a loose but tight association, and as needs be, we connect. I'm probably now on a monthly or quarterly basis talking to two or three guys, but I've lost some good friends. Just last month, Tom Browning, class of 64 from the academy, class of 63, lived with Tom. Tom was with John McCain, as I was, as well, later in the incarceration period. And Tom died of cancer just this last month. So, and over the years, I can remember when John was up here in Rockford, and we were doing a thing at Memorial Hall, and we were talking about the guys that have gone west. And there was a real poignancy in his phrase, especially for some of his Naval Academy buddies. You know, much like I've got the Air Force Academy, and I'm going to be out of my 55th reunion here early days of October.
God bless.
Yeah, it's going to be a great thing. It's a big deal. We'll drink a toast to the fallen, and we'll, in that chapel, you know, that Air Force Academy chapel that is so striking architecturally with all the spires. Do you know it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's been over.
Yeah, we still say we don't know whether to pray in it, to it, or for it, but there we are. And so those relations mean a lot. But, you know, when I got called by you to maybe say a few words in the face of so many thousands of words that will be issued about John, I was really troubled to try to, you know, come up with something that would be different and wouldn't just fall into that well of words that some will be so elevated that John would cringe.
Right.
He was very much a realist. Others will, you know, they'll run the gamut from the effusive to the critical. And I was trying to figure out what the heck it was that I could say that would make any sense to you and Dave and your listeners. And maybe I came up with it, but we'll reserve a minute or two and see where conversation takes us.
We'll do that when we come back. But I do want to, because obviously I want to hear that. But, I don't know that I've ever asked you this, and I consider you a friend, not just a friend of the show. But what kept you guys going? I mean, I know in your very famous book, Taps on the Walls, memorizing the poetry that you wrote to keep your mind active and also because of your feelings. But McCain, you're viciously beaten. We know stories about the things that you went through. And, of course, you guys don't talk about this stuff unless you get goaded into talking about it. And I respect
Well, there's a lot of whiskey, involved.
Whiskey. Right, a few shots. But I have to say, it's remarkable to think about because I don't know any of us who could have done it. And I know what you've told me before. You said, look, you got two choices, you live or you die. But what kept you going?
I would describe it to two things. One, we were all cut from a particular piece of cloth called fighter pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a speed is life and indomitable will thing, and without making it sound like some kind of ego trip. But we were very proud of being in that small select group, and there were expectations we had of ourselves and of our fellows. But at the end of the day, the mission was not to survive, it was to survive with honor. We wanted you to be proud of us. It was that simple.
It's amazing.
We couldn't imagine coming back with our head held low and beaten and not being the kind of troops you wanted us to be. We wanted you to be proud of us.
It's General John Borling, and I would urge you to also, when you have an opportunity, sooner than later, go to SOSAmerica.org. It's an organization that's very important to him and ought to be important to all of us, so I have to check that out. Stand by, General. More with General Borling in just a second.
I live alone in the wilderness and pull a sled through the snow until I'm in peak physical condition.
How would that help you win an election?
It won't. But if I ever have to fight Vladimir Putin, I'll be ready.
He was tough, wasn't he? General John Borling is with us talking about John McCain, his friend and fellow POW. General Borling, as most of you know, spent 6.5 years as a prisoner of war as well. They both made it back here to very successful lives afterwards, and we're celebrating the life of John McCain this week. Tell me, you put a lot of thought into this, and that's not a prerequisite to be on this show, but what do you want to say about John McCain?
Well, the first thing I'd comment on before I get into that sentiment that I do want to express is that you guys keep playing these stories that John was so fond of telling, these jokes, if you will. He had a great, great sense of humor. I like people who are quick to laugh and can make fun of things. And, he was concerned about the vitality of the Congress. And he used to say, the approval rating for the U.S. Congress is at its lowest rating ever, 9% or whatever it was, a variable single digits. He said, at this point, we're down to blood relatives and paid staff. And but he said so, tongue in cheek, because he really did believe in the institutions of the country. And he was quote ascribed to him was that he said, I learned to love my country most deeply when I was in the captivity of another. And I think John's sense of optimism was probably a salient feature in his life, no matter how stacked the odds, that he was going to keep that balance, keep that rosy look on life. He had a lot of, if you traveled with him, as a number of us did on the campaign trail, especially during the presidential campaign, it was refreshing, and especially in the early days when the campaign was, to put it delicately, in the toilet. And we had no money, no buses, nothing. We were all out there in our own cars, and we were, you know, staying at the La Quinta and eating at Denny's and doing all that stuff. And it was great because we'd get together after day's foray in Iowa and New Hampshire, for example. And we'd have these knockdown, drag out kind of conversations. They'd always end up with laughter and a couple beers, and we'd then gird our loins and get out there the next day. And another favorite story of mine, anyway, and of John's, was after the presidential loss, people asked him, how did he feel? And he came up with that old story he used to such advantage about, I went to bed, slept like a baby, sleep 2 hours, get up, cry, go back to bed, sleep 2 hours, get up, cry, which would be absolutely opposite of his attitude. So you carry those little vignettes with you on the first and the personal moments, and you wish him and the family well. I sent a note along with so many, of course, others who sent notes down to Cindy and Megan, and the nation will fixate, and properly so, on John McCain, the man, the reality, the legends, and it'll all get mixed up. And for those of us who know him personally over an extended period, he'll continue to march with us in our memories and as an example. But I think we're running short on time. I did want to offer that quote, telling phrase about him. Is that okay?
Absolutely. I got plenty of time for you.
Well, I want to come back, because John talked about, he and I talked a lot about SOS America.
Yeah, of course.
Over South America, which is that bit noir of mine and others. And in fact, if you read the Wall Street Journal today, you'll see that the whole business of national service, military and otherwise, is very much, again, on the lips of and on the minds of people. And this time it's Germany, which used to have a program of military conscription, but does not now. And they're thinking seriously about putting it back in, for the very good reason that it means you can do some nation building in your own nation. You can talk about shared values and experiences. Again, messages that John McCain very much cared about, and that's what service over South America.
And you're always welcome to be here to talk about SOS America at SOSAmerica.org.
Well, I'm probably going to come and just camp out for a week.
I'm telling you. Listen, I'll get out of your way. You know that.
Look, let me offer the phrase.
Please, go ahead.
Well, it's frankly from the foreword that John wrote to my book, and I picked it up. I hadn't looked at it in a long time. But this is testimony to the man in his own words. Quote, "The great honor of my life is to have served in the company of heroes. In captivity in Vietnam, we fought every day to keep our honor intact, our minds sharp, and bodies functional." He goes on and says some very nice things in the foreword to my book. But if you had to capture the spirit of the man McCain, to me, was the recognition that he was one of a very special group. And boy, he was in so many special groups. He was in the Senate, the most exclusive club in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he never lost contact. He never lost that connection to that extraordinary experience that we all did our best to acquit ourselves. So again, I come back so you guys would be proud. Thanks for letting me talk a little bit about John McCain.
Listen, General, I got to tell you, it's a beautiful way to remember your friend, and from one of the best in the Air Force, about one of the best in the Navy. Thank you for your service and your sacrifice, and please give a hug to your lovely wife, Myrna, and tell her I said hello as well.
We will, along with you and your guys there and all the people who are connected with your wonderful show, Steve, continue to march. That's the deal.
Thank you, my friend. General John Borling on John McCain. It's just shut up and get out of the way. Right?
You know, it seems like you could do 12 hours and not run out of stories.
And, you know, I meant what I said, too, and I know you know this, Dave, because our dads were part of a generation that even came before the Vietnam generation. And Soldiers talk to soldiers about what soldiers experienced, but the only way you get soldiers to talk to the rest of us about it is if you really goad them and push them, and they see a value in it. And that level of modesty and that honor is something that I feel like we've lost a lot of, and I certainly hope we find a way to get it back, because that would be a great way to honor the legacy of McCain.
No question.
We'll come back right after this with the headlines and more to come. Steve Cochran Show. We got to find out if Dave Ennett made it through his Tough Mudder competition. We're all on the edge of our seat this morning. We're hoping he's okay. And also where he's still finding mud on his person. That's next to you on 720 WGN.
From the Allstate Skyline Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
You got to get a little mud on the tires.
We'll do a well-being check on Dave Ennett in just a second. But let me go to the young Ennett, Steve Ennett. We talked to you on Friday, Stephen, about this mudder that you invited your dad to do with you. Now, I want you to be honest with me. You've always been honest with me. Of course, I've known you since you were two. Okay, maybe not that long ago. But you've always been honest with me. After Dad said yes, even knowing what great shape your father's in, did you worry, if I kill Dad, Mom's going to be really mad?
The thought of him actually not surviving the Tough Mudder did not cross my mind.
Good.
I think that's
good,
a little
good.
Extreme.
Good.
You know, obviously going into something that neither of us had really any idea what we were getting into, it was hard to know how Saturday was going to play out.
It sounds like, and we've had off-the-air conversations, Dave, about this, but it sounds like you guys had as much fun as you could have soaked and caked in mud. Is that true?
I would say that's a pretty accurate statement. Steve, would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I really would never, there's probably no other situation where I'd want to be covered in mud like that, but at a certain point, you just kind of get over it and sort of forget that how disgusting it is for a little while.
And it's co-ed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a 10-mile course with how many obstacles?
20 obstacles.
20 obstacles. Stephen, what was the toughest one?
You know, I think the toughest one was actually one of the shortest ones. Probably just the, it's actually titled the Arctic Enema, where you just dive into freezing cold ice water and dive under some obstacles. You're only in the water for about 10 seconds, but it's a long 10 seconds in that freezing water.
How did they keep it cold? They just kept dumping ice in it?
They have a truck of ice, and they keep dumping ice into this.
Have you done the lake plunge?
No, okay, never have.
Neither have I, but it had to be like that kind of feel, right?
Well, I think except that it had to be about 88 degrees at that point.
Oh, outside.
So it still, all that did was drop your body temperature to about 60 very quickly.
So, Steve, when you jump into that ice-cold water, I'm told it feels like needles striking you. Is that accurate?
You know, you just sort of black out and it's over before you just kind of lose all sense of everything and just try to get out as fast as possible.
You have to submerge because of these obstacles. So you have to go all the way in. You can't fake it.
So did they break this down in flights, like age categories, or
no,
was it everyone for themselves?
No, everybody for themselves.
Did you guys stick together?
Yes.
Most of the time?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't say, I'm going to beat you, so you just go ahead. Steven.
No, the pace we went is probably what I didn't feel like I had to slow down. If anything, I had trouble keeping up with my dad. So.
Well, here's the thing.
Come on.
Well, Dave said he did skip a couple of obstacles or got around.
Yeah, you're allowed
them.
To, right? Skip the obstacles if you
don't
feel
comfortable. No, I didn't skip any. I just didn't finish them because I fell.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Was one of them that ridiculous wall that you had to get over?
We got over the walls, didn't we?
Yeah, we got over the wall. That one's fun because you just get a running start and jump, and then there's people waiting at the
You know, Steve's talking about the one at the end, the happy ending, so to speak.
Okay, I love the names of these.
Well, the one that was toughest for me was called the Funky Monkey.
What is the funky monkey? Were any monkeys injured during this event?
I don't believe so, but I almost was. And Steve killed it on this.
What's the funky monkey?
It's a monkey bar that's slanted up. So you grab one of the monkey bars, you are climbing up on the monkey bars. Then you have to reach from the monkey bars, the end of the monkey bars, halfway out over this water. You have to reach for a wheel.
Like an American Ninja Warrior thing. Okay, got it.
So I got up the monkey bar, reach for the wheel, and you have to turn yourself on the wheel to get to the next wheel.
And your hands are slippery.
Your hands, everything's wet, covered with mud. I got to the second wheel, and down I went. And you completely submerge
in the mud. How much water do you land in?
I mean, there had to be probably 10 feet of water there, I'm thinking, because I went down a few feet under the water before I came back up.
And Steve, the one that keeps coming to mind as I was wondering if you two made it this weekend was this one, because I looked at the website, and it's these little electrode things that dangle down. Because what did you tell Steve when he was little? Hey, don't get near an electrical socket with your wet hands.
Exactly.
Don't touch electrical stuff with wetness. Get out of a lightning storm. So this is literally like strings with little shocking devices on the end of
them
or something?
Shock therapy. That's an optional one.
It is?
Yes, and we skipped that.
You know what, Steve? He didn't raise any fools, did he?
I mean, it just, they gave us a warning at the beginning that if you have any metal on you, then you probably shouldn't. I had my wedding ring on, so I thought just to be safe, we went around that one.
I was thinking about your mom, because your wife, Steve, only had to, you know, wonder if you were mentally sane. Your mom had to wonder if her son and her husband were all there. So who did you get more grief from? Who was needling you more?
I didn't get much grief from either. You know, I tried to rally the troops and get everyone to join in, but they respectfully declined. But my mom actually came to watch everything unfold Saturday.
Wow!
Yeah, she did. The only bad thing, we all got sunburned because we couldn't put sunscreen on because of the mud.
Yeah, it wouldn't last.
And it was cloudy when we started. But Karen came out there and she was a trooper. She hung out all day, took some pictures.
Is there a big crowd? A bunch of people
this
watching.
Thing is huge.
Yeah, I heard it's
this
a
thing
big
is really big.
I was going to do it, but I forgot.
Right.
I want to know if you're going to do it again.
I am.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mary, you did it once, right?
Once and out.
All right, boys and Mary. Mike from Crystal Lake is part of the Tough Mudder medical team. Mike, I don't know. I'm impressed with both these guys, but I guess it's just another day at work for you, huh?
Yeah, we all got to volunteer to come out there, and it was amazing.
So, did you meet Mr. Ennett, the famous Dave Ennett, while he was going through this, or was you wouldn't know if you did because he was covered with mud?
I didn't. You know what? They all kind of looked the same, and we were running our tails off too. But I heard he was competing, so I was kind of disappointed that he didn't have a big flag behind him, or a big
purple Northwestern hat.
I have to tell you, I was so impressed, like, by the medical team, because they give you a pep talk at the beginning, and they tell you if anybody gets hurt or is in distress, that all of the mudders then hold their hands up, make an X with their arms high above their head.
Oh, so you know where the person is.
We saw it happen once, and immediately you saw dozens of people holding their hands up like that, and the medical team was out there in an instant.
Wow.
So, kudos.
Oh, yeah.
What's the number one injury you saw, Mike?
Let's see. At my obstacle, I was right after Everest, which is a lot like the wall that Dave and Steve were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people got nicked up on Everest because there was a half pipe kind of thing that was PVC, and it would cut through people's hands. And I saw a lady that got her chin pretty nicked up, and she went back afterwards to the tent, and they stitched her up in the tent.
Wow, very impressive.
It was a blast. My sister and I did it this year. I've got to say, I think it was just about as athletic as running through all that freaking mud.
Right, that's medical talk. Where do you do your normal medical work?
I'm an EMT student.
Okay, cool. Well, good luck with the career, man.
And my sister's a lifeguard.
Yeah, that's great, man. What a way to bond. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for looking out for us.
Isn't it kind of scary when a lifeguard is on duty?
Right.
Like, oh.
Yeah, a lifeguard
well,
with...
They did, even on the mud, the little mud ponds, they had lifeguards there.
Wow. I'm just trying to think of the amount of time it took to set this up at the airport, right?
I can't imagine. It's all crazy. Around the airport.
All right, Steve, your father's committed to doing it again, but that doesn't mean you have to. Are you going to do it again?
Yeah, I think...
Wait a minute. Saturday, you were definite.
Can I just say, you guys, we'll ask you next year, like a month before it? Not now. Too gypped
out. Yeah, just asking a couple... I'd say I'm 95%. It'll be easier to say in a couple weeks. I'm still recovering a little bit, but no, it was a really great
time.
Are you guys
sore at all?
Yeah, I am.
Because you're using muscles you're not normally using.
Well, yeah, the monkey bars, because you hang for so long.
Oh, yeah.
And then and you're lunging for the next one. So it's kind of, and I was all cut up. I didn't realize it, but when I got home after I took a shower, got the mud off, I had scrapes and bruises on my knees and my elbows, but it's all worth it.
Well, I got to tell you guys, I know it was a lot of work, and it's great bonding, and I certainly respect that. But yesterday, Abigail stayed with us, and she got up at 5:30, and I normally sleep in on a Sunday, so it's similar to what you do.
Very similar. Very similar.
Very similar.
But I'm very proud of this guy for doing it.
You should be.
And he did great.
Yeah, what
he
a cool thing for
awesome.
The two of you. All right, Stephen, next year when you want to do this, come by, and I'll talk you out of it right before you agree.
All right, or maybe I'll talk you into it.
Oh, look at you.
There you go.
Yeah, you know what?
Touché.
Maybe. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. What a good guy.
Thank you.
What a good guy.
See you, bud.
You and it. I like you both.
Later.
Thanks. There you go.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Neil Simon died this weekend as well. We'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. One of the great comedy minds, period, anytime, anywhere. But Super Joe, don't you have a White Sox Monday question we can get to?
I sure do.
All right, so you give us a question. First correct answer, starting with caller number 7, wins tickets for the Sox and the Detroit Tigers. Labor Day, Monday. All right, when are you ready?
In honor of college football starting this week, today's trivia question is about two sports stars.
Okay.
In the last 30 years, the White Sox have drafted 4 players in the first round who also played Division I football. Name one.
Oh, that is a good question. All right, give it to me again.
In the last 30 years, the White Sox have drafted 4 players in the first round of the MLB draft who also played Division I football. Name one player.
Okay. All right. Starting with caller 7. Again, White Sox Tigers tickets and Super Joe's questions are all available online at the Super Joe question website.
I've been in politics for over 20 years. And for over 20 years, I've had Barbara Streisand trying to do my job. So I decided to try my hand at her job. Check out this classic. Like the corners of my mind. Watercolor memories of the way we were.
Celebrating the life of John McCain. And you know, it's interesting, the juxtaposition of the passing of Neil Simon. Neil Simon was a part of that Your Show of Shows incredible all-star comedy cast of writers, which included Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, amongst many others. Larry Gelbart, I think, was in that group, the guy that created MASH. But Neil Simon, and this is amazing to me, never won a Tony, never won an Oscar with all the
really?
Hits that he had. Look at this lineup. He passed, by the way, this weekend. He was 91 years old. The Odd Couple, The Goodbye Girl, just off the top of the list here. The Sunshine Boys. I'm going to scroll down here as fast as I can so I can actually give you the information. Murder by Death. And on. I mean, just on and on and on. The guy had... The Out of Towners was his.
Barefoot in the Park.
Yep, there you go. Barefoot in the Park.
That was a big one.
And he... Biloxi Blues. Plaza Suite. He never won. How could he not win a Tony? The Oscars never had respect for comedy, but how could he not have won a Tony?
That's amazing.
It's crazy. You mentioned Barefoot in the Park, and it goes back, I'm trying to see, all the way back to, is it the late 60s when he got his start? The Heartbreak Kid is in here. Just hit after hit after hit after hit. And as I said, the Sid Caesar Hour in your show of shows is where he got his start as a writer. And just one of the funniest guys that there was. And another one of these guys that never needed to be on camera. You know, Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks went on to have great careers as stars. But Neil Simon just did it. Just wrote it, put it together, and made it great.
There were over 9,000 performances of his work between 65 and 80. That's
it's crazy. Amazing, right?
Yeah, and no awards?
Well, wow. That's the thing, too. And the juxtaposition of all the appropriate attention for John McCain. But you're barely seeing a story today about Neil Simon because of when he passed. And that's nobody's fault, obviously, but that's just the way it worked out. And it's sort of reminiscent of his career. He never got the respect that he fully deserved. He's very famous. He's very wealthy and had a wonderful life. But I was amazed when I saw that there weren't just a room full of trophies with his name on them. So Neil Simon gone at 91 years old.
Yeah, and Reiner is real. He's in his 90s as well.
Carl Reiner's got to be 93 or 94 now. He still tweets about every other hour.
Yeah,
they did
still
that
hilarious.
HBO show about if you're not in the obituaries, have breakfast. Did you see that?
right,
so good.
Yeah, wake up, you're not in the obits, order breakfast.
Good news.
Yeah, and at least three times a week, sometimes more, though, the two of these knuckleheads have played it up a little bit. Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks have dinner together. And they're the two old guys who put their napkins down the front of their shirt, mm-hmm. You know, old school. And they have TV trays. And they usually go to Carl Reiner's house. Both their wives are gone. And whoever is making dinner brings them out their dinner. And they sit there, watch TV, and talk about show business.
And they watch old movies.
They will love to watch old movies. But just to sit around and hear the stories would be great.
Can you imagine?
Carl Reiner was nice enough to come on this show many times, and he hasn't been on a long time. We should do that again, obviously, sooner than later. But one of my favorite appearances he had when I was doing the old afternoon show was we were supposed to talk about a book. I have no recollection of what the book was because he's written a ton of them. And I said, well, you know, what are you doing? He goes, I just finished lunch. And I go, what'd you have? And he went, oh, Steve, I had the best soup. And he did like 9 minutes on soup, like the joy of soup. I go,
it's
Carl,
the highlight of the day.
Yeah, I go, Carl, we're out of time. He goes, it's okay. I talked about soup. Mention my book. Just the greatest. We'll find a Neil Simon clip for you before the hour is complete. We'll come back in a moment with more. It's 9:17. Steve Cochran Show continues on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Donald on the South Side. Super Joe, remind me of the question.
College football starts up this week. In the last 30 years, the White Sox have drafted four players in the first round of the MLB draft who have also played Division I football. Name one.
Now, you can get help from Dave. Do you know the answer to this?
I think I've got a couple of them. I know I've got a couple of them. But
four?
I'm not sure on all four.
I can think of one.
Yeah, there's one that's pretty obvious.
Yeah. And I physically ran into him, and it was like running into a wall of granite.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Donald. Donald, who you got?
Frank Thomas.
Yes. Frank Thomas. Auburn, 1989. You know any of the others?
I'd just be guessing, you know, but because not all of them are built like him.
Yeah, that's so. A true story. You got one?
I think one. Joe, correct me if I'm wrong. Joe Borchard.
There you go.
Played at Stanford, right?
That's exactly right.
And then,
yeah, played quarterback.
Now, Gordon Beckham was a football player, but he never played D1 college football.
No,
he?
Not at Georgia.
Who are the other two?
Wide receiver Jared Mitchell out of LSU. And quarterback Josh Fields out of Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
You remember that guy?
I remember Josh Fields, yeah.
He was on the field for the Perfecto for mm-hmm. Burley.
Yeah.
And what position did Frank Thomas play?
Tight end.
Is he a tight end? Yeah.
Yeah. So he and Bo were...
Well, I knew his first base. Yeah, I mean football. But congratulations, Donald. You've got those tickets.
Well, that's the man I met once upon a time, so...
Yeah, there you go. White Sox and the Tigers, Monday, September 3rd. You're going. Have fun.
He was an Auburn Tiger. So that's sort of ironic, isn't it?
Detroit Tigers, Auburn. Look what you did there. Thanks for listening, man. I appreciate it. Coming back next, 720 WGN and CLTV.
Neil Simon, the prolific contributor to so much enjoyment on Broadway with Barefoot in the Park and The Odd Couple and Come Blow Your Horn.
Keep going, you hot, Fred.
And tonight, Sweet Charity. Glorious occasion for you, Neil. Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you very much. Very exciting, Fred. Thank you. To work with a performer like Gwen Verdon, I feel every time I come to rehearsal, I should pay. I wanted to pay for my opening night tickets tonight because she's just such a joy to watch.
Gwen Verdon, why is she so great?
Because she's just sheer perfection. She can't make a wrong move. Anything she does is right. Her instincts are just perfect. It's her attitude towards the profession. I've never seen her in a rehearsal that didn't seem as though there were 5,000 people out front. She gives every
Super Joe?
The writers, because then you know
opening night of Sweet Charity.
Sweet Charity, there you go. Neil Simon, you know, I was talking about the writer's room. Check this out, Dave. Neil Simon, and by the way, they all wrote sort of tributes to those years, 1950 to 1954, greatest years of their lives. They all pretty much agreed on that. Neil Simon wrote Laughter on the 23rd Floor. Carl Reiner said Your Show of Shows was the basis for the Dick Van Dyke Show. Mel Brooks was the producer for My Favorite Year, which was inspired by his stints on that show and also the successor, Caesar's Hour. That staff included Danny Simon, who was the inspiration for The Odd Couple, and also credited with teaching his brother Neil Simon how to write comedy, as well as a young man named Woody Allen.
Wow.
Woody Allen was on that staff as well. You ever see Woody Allen, any of the old stand-up clips? Or
yes.
He's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great stand-up. And Larry Gelbart was also on the Caesar Hour show. He didn't do Your Show of Shows. Larry Gelbart created a little show called MASH.
What did he do besides that? Not that that's not pretty
Gelbart,
significant.
He had a couple of successes after that, but nothing at that level. I don't know. Remember when McLean Stevenson left to do Hello, Larry? I don't think that was Larry Gelbart.
No.
I think that was somebody else. But the worst decision in the history of show business. Yeah. MASH. That's not going to last. Neil Simon, our thoughts today as well after that incredible, incredible career. And that's something we can discuss more with Dean tomorrow because I could be wrong, but I mean, shouldn't the guy have at least won a participation ribbon?
You would think.
I mean, something.
Or lifetime achievement, something.
Yeah. Or as Mel Brooks would have said, a dinner. Give the guy a dinner for crying out loud.
Soup.
Maybe some soup. It's 9:26. Still to come, Chris Getz on Michael Kopech and that stacked farm system for your Chicago White Sox. And much more to cover before we're done, including if I have time to do this, I have at least three stories. There is no other room on the show for any place else. The three things. Remember I've changed the name of this segment about 15 times?
Yes.
It's either called Three Things or Crap I Didn't Have Any Place For on the rest of the show. You know, there's a lot of the names for it, but essentially it's stories that don't fit anywhere else. Okay?
Okay, that last one I don't think is a real good way to sell it.
The stuff that we don't do on this show is better than anything else anybody's doing on their show.
That's a good way to sell it.
9:26, coming back on CLTV and 720 WGN.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
Let's go, 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 White Sox! We're with you all the way. You're always in there fighting and you do your best. We're glad to have you out here in the middle.
Didn't Aerosmith do this originally? Wasn't it Steven Tyler and Aerosmith
that
did the original?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Super Joe's excited because Chris Getz is about to join us as a Michigan guy. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yo, you knew that?
I did.
Oh, I didn't know that you knew that. As a Northwestern guy, can you talk to Chris?
Yes. Is it okay? Yes, I can talk to him.
All right, I'm just checking for sure. It's Chris Getz who can talk all about player development and the most stacked farm system in baseball, bar none. But specifically, Chris, what about this Kopech kid? I think you may have something here.
I think so. And yesterday was obviously an enjoyable one for him in player development of the organization. But what was great is he really didn't have his best stuff, and he still put us in a position to win a ball game, in which we did. He's been open about that, and it just shows the potential that this kid has. But it was a quality start, and we look forward to seeing the next one.
Yeah, he got into some trouble in the, I think, in the second inning, Chris, and then a couple innings later, they loaded the bases. But each time, he's one of those guys you just get the sense can kind of reach down and find that extra gear when he needs that one pitch to get out of trouble. Is that your sense?
Yeah, I mean, he's got very good stuff, so he's definitely has some room for error, so to speak. But he showed tremendous poise yesterday. And like you said, reaching back and executing the pitch, in which he got that, he induced that double play, which was, you know, just great for the team. They turned it and executed what they needed to do there. But he's got a high ceiling. He's got a chance to be a front-end guy, but not only physically, but mentally, he's got what it takes to be a guy that we can win a championship with.
Super Joe could not be a bigger Michigan fan and even bigger White Sox fan. So, Chris, this is the right guy to talk to you. what's your question, Super Joe?
Say, Chris, there have been some notable injuries in the in the front end of the White Sox pipeline. What kind of messages is the organization giving to guys like Jake Berger, Mike Rodolfo, and just so that people don't get impatient?
You know, unfortunately, injuries are going to happen in every system, and we got hit with a couple this year. We'll assess systematically what we can do better. A lot of these things were fluke injuries, but for Jake Berger, you know, keeping him engaged while he's recovering from his injury, doing some things just to stay sharp baseball wise, even though, you know, obviously he has to stay off his legs. He's going to have a very good offseason. He's coming along, and we look forward to seeing a healthy, productive Jake Berger next year. Mike Rodolfo, although there was a setback, coming into spring training and having that injury early on, we didn't know what kind of path it was going to go this season. We were happy that we were able to get 300-plus at-bats at high A, productive at-bats. And although he had Tommy John surgery, he's progressing well, and we'll be able to have a good chunk of next year as well. So although there have been setbacks, we've certainly taken advantage of those situations.
Chris, I had a chance to watch Eloy Jimenez, NBC Sports Chicago, picked up the game after the Sox-Tigers game yesterday. And I think he 3-for-4, a double, a triple, knocked in three. This isn't any kind of a revelation. I mean, I think people are aware of how talented he is. But he writes a column last week in the Players Tribune in which he says, I want to make Chicago proud. I want to make the White Sox proud. I want to win World Series. And as a player development director and someone who's overseeing these guys as they come up through your farm system, that's just got to make you feel great to hear guys saying, I want to be part of this turnaround.
Yeah, it's something, it's a goal from a farm director standpoint, certainly as an organization, to kind of have a selfless approach to everything. He's an ultra-talented player. He's continued to play well. Certainly we're making up for lost time. It's kind of been a choppy year, losing part of April. But he's continued to answer the bell. But to have that mindset of wanting to win championships, be a part of this whole thing, and it's not necessarily just about Eloy Jimenez, that's when you know you've got the right guys to move forward with.
It's got to be great, though, having a kid that goes, hey, I'm ready now. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go. Come on. I can't wait. As opposed to somebody that's going, I don't know. I'll get there.
Yeah, confidence is rarely a bad thing. To have that mentality, we want all our guys to think they're ready to play in the big league. So when they do get that opportunity, they're positioned for success.
Before I let you go, because there's so much talk about how stacked this farm system is, is that extra pressure on you, or you just love that to be a good problem to have?
You know, I really enjoy it. We've got a great group of people, staff, players, and it's a job that never gets boring. There's constantly action, and I rarely get the time to sit back and really overthink anything because there's just so much work to do on a daily basis. But I'm fortunate to be in this position to help these guys get to the big leagues, but once they get there, hopefully they can compete for championships, because that's really what this is about.
Exciting times, White Sox baseball, and we've got every game here, and as they get better, every game's still going to be here. So
that's right.
Hang around for that. Super Joe, do you have any Michigan things you'd like to talk about with Chris Getz?
Yeah, Chris, where are you watching the game with Rick Hahn this Saturday?
That's right. We haven't found our spot, but we got plenty of options in Chicago, that's for sure.
Okay. See how he tried to play that right down the middle? Because he wants the other Big Ten fans to show up. Right. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Chris Getz. So his job, Dave, is basically to make sure that Jimenez doesn't lose his mind until he comes up, and also bring along these other guys and go, hey, boss, this guy, and this guy.
Right. And look, he knows every one of the players in the pipeline inside and out, their strengths and weaknesses, and how far along they are in the development process.
How much has the game changed in that space? Because in the old days, and by the old days, I mean, what, the 70s, as recently as the 70s, maybe even the 80s, yeah, all pre-internet, didn't you have to get in a car and go to these places, or get on a plane and go to these places?
Yeah, and I think a lot of these guys still do, but they don't have to anymore. That's the beauty of it. They have an opportunity to watch almost every minor league game. You can at least watch a video stream.
Yeah.
And so, there's no question it has changed a lot.
Hmm. Now, when you and I were coming up in the 30s, what? Let's do a few stories we didn't have time to get to before we're done, and we'll come back. Oh, and Bill's back today. Find out how Bill did. Remember tennis, Bill?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I probably should have been putting the results in the sports this morning.
You're going to hear about it. You know you will. The Steve Cochran Show continues on CLTV and 720 WGN.
You know how people call me the Maverick?
Yeah.
Well, I thought I might try a strategy called the reverse Maverick. That's where I do whatever anybody tells me. I don't ask questions. I just go with the flow. If that doesn't work, I go to the double Maverick. That's where I go totally berserker and just freak everybody out. Even the regular Mavericks.
That doesn't sound like the best strategy.
It isn't.
Who is it called? Our friends are there. Maverick is the name. Riding the train.
9:51. Dave was just telling me off the air, the Chicago Bulls even have a connection to John McCain. What's that story?
Larry Markkanen, their second-year man, former first-round pick, tweeted yesterday, rest in peace, Senator McCain. I'll forever be grateful to you for you helping a kid from Finland get a visa to live out my dream of playing basketball in the States. And of course, he played at University of Arizona.
So there's your connection. So that's a cool story, too.
Yeah.
All right. This is three things. Three things we haven't had time to do on the rest of the show. I'll give you headlines. You guys can vote on which story you want me to do. What's a reverse fact check? That's one headline. What's a reverse fact check? Not a fact check. A reverse fact check. What costs more, Jerry Seinfeld's coffee maker or Michael Jackson's glove? And then one other one on money. How much money is too much money for a homeless guy? Okay, who wants what? Joe?
Homeless dude.
Homeless dude. Pete? Yeah, Pete says homeless guy.
Coffee maker thing.
Coffee maker. Oh, look what you did there. Mm. All right, Dave, you're deciding vote.
Reverse fact check.
All right, looks like the homeless guy is first up. This story is troubling on a lot of levels. There's a veteran named Johnny Bobbitt, and about a year ago, Johnny Bobbitt is where he normally is panhandling. A woman's car runs out of gas. This is outside of Philadelphia on an exit. He goes up to the woman's car and tells her, keep the windows up, lock the door. I'll be back with some gas. He took what was his last $20 at the time, put gas in the gas can, brought it back, and filled her car up. Now, some of you may have seen this story. This was a big story for a little while. It turns into a GoFundMe campaign, which the couple, the boyfriend and girlfriend, kind of took control of this guy's life to try to turn him around. They were hoping to raise $10,000. Woman's name is Kate McClure, by the way. And they ended up raising $400,000. Well, Johnny Bobbitt is now a year down the road. He is still has an addiction to drugs, and he is still homeless and on the street because he says the couple never gave him money. They kept the vast majority of the money. Now, there are some people looking into this from a legal standpoint, but like everything else on the internet, it gets a little dicey. What laws did they break? You know, breaking a promise isn't necessarily breaking a law, but did you scam the public into giving money to GoFundMe? GoFundMe's legal team is looking into it. The reason it's troubling on a lot of levels is the boyfriend in this scenario, who wasn't part of the original story, said he still has a major addiction problem, and giving that kind of money to a guy with an addiction problem like that is like handing him a loaded gun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that may be true, but you don't get to make that decision. You're just the guy who got the money raised, and frankly, you're not the guy, the girlfriend is, who got the money raised. So you can certainly go out and get a trust started. You can get someone who's in charge of, you know, a homeless slash addiction program to put the money out in an appropriate manner. But you don't get to keep half of it.
Right.
By the way,
right.
They took multiple vacations and bought themselves a BMW.
Okay, sounds like they really did put that money to great use.
And they called it, they said they had expenses that were accumulating from helping him out, driving him around. Try to explain that to the 14,000 donors that totaled up the $400,000. So your hope is that not just you hand a huge check to this guy, but that you tell this guy, well, yeah, we're going to put this money into trust, and we want to get you help. So this is the program we'd like you to get involved with, because you can't force him to do anything.
But instead, you go to the Bahamas.
Not good. Not good. All right, Mary, you wanted to hear about Jerry Seinfeld's coffee maker.
I did. And what was it, Michael Jackson's what?
Michael Jackson's glove is at auction. Michael Jackson's glove is going to go for $15,000. Remember the one glove?
That's all?
Yeah. How much do you think Jerry Seinfeld's, and by the way, he's not auctioning this off. How much do you think his coffee maker cost?
It's going to go for more, for sure. $25,000.
See, I think this is crazy.
It's stupid if it does.
$17,000.
Wow. Does it make K-cups?
$17,000. It's an Electra Bell Epoque, I think is the pronunciation, espresso machine. He keeps it in his home in his Hamptons, where he and Jessica spend their summers. That's his wife. It's part of their estate. But what the hell kind of espresso do you get out of a $17,000 espresso maker?
Better be good.
Yeah, I don't get it. And the reverse fact check story? Here's the reverse fact check story. The media columnist for the Baltimore Sun says, let's just assume everything Trump says is a lie. So I've invented the reverse fact check. Whatever he says, we check it to see if it's true. Because that's the only way we'll find out. We assume it's a lie. That's the reverse fact check.
So that's why it's reverse.
We assume it's a lie, and then we check and see if we're right that it's a lie. And if it's not, it's true.
Gotcha.
There you go. Three things. Back with the Bill and Wendy experience. In just a moment on 7. By the way, Bill's still wearing the cutest tennis shorts. They really are adorable.
Still dressed?
More in a moment on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are here. How are you guys?
Hi, Steve. Hi Dave.
Bill.
Hey, Justin.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi, the suspense is killing me, Mr. Tennis.
Oh.
You want to save it for our show?
Yeah, you probably
should. We'll build it. Yeah.
Probably should. Okay.
At the very end, we'll say
we're still trying to figure out if Dave survived the Tough Mudder competition.
I heard about that, Dave. Wow. Wow.
You're pretty amazing, Mr. Ennett.
Thank you very much.
He's still finding mud in spaces.
I am.
Know he had.
I'm still. The filter on the washing machine, when we brought all the clothes back, and the rinse cycle, it's just spewing mud into the sink in the laundry room.
You're not supposed to keep the clothes. You're supposed to throw them away.
Why?
What about your shoes?
What am I going to wear next year? No, I hose those off.
Oh, damn.
The weird thing is, you knew going in that there would be mud involved. Like,
yes.
Usually, you'd think, as soon as I hear the mud part, I'm out, but you knew there was going to be mud.
And actually, you're crawling through mud under barbed wire. So,
I mean, who wouldn't?
That's how I get to work every day.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
I saw the picture. You were completely covered in mud. I almost didn't recognize you.
Yeah.
We thought they were stills caked from Papillon. That's what I thought I was looking at. Dave's in Papillon.
Yeah, it did look like an escape movie. But congratulations to everyone.
To everyone.
Yeah, I don't know.
Everybody.
See you tomorrow.